This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashran Johan. We're only a few days away from the Johor State elections. Over the past couple of weeks, political parties have been busy campaigning, trying to win the hearts and minds of Johorians. Experts have claimed that the upcoming Johor elections is highly important and will potentially even shape the outcome of GE15 for various reasons, including the fact that this will be the first elections that we will see 18 to 21-year-olds go out and vote, as well as many other people who did not register to vote prior to this when you were required to manually register. But with all of this, with all of the hype we are seeing on social media and all of that, do the masses on the ground care? And what could be the potential outcome of this election? Joining me on the show to help me unpack everything is Dr. Bridget Welch. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. Welcome to the show, Bridget. Good to have you on again.
Always great to be here.
Let's get right into it, Bridget. Nominations are over and done. 239 candidates for 56 seats, multiple cornered fights everywhere. 15% of the candidates are women. How are you feeling about this? What are your overall thoughts on these nominations?
Well, I think, first of all, let's take the big picture and that there's a lot of candidates on offer, right? So, I mean, for, you know, if we see the bigger impact is that there are more people joining politics, participating in politics, giving voters more choices. And that in itself is a positive thing. However, for most people, there's also a situation where they, you know, there's not enough time to know who is who to even get to know them. And the campaign is really, you know, the first 10 days is almost like a, so hello, here am I type of situation, as opposed to really sitting down and engaging voters in a meaningful way and talking about the issues that Johorians want to talk about, which is the economy predominantly, but also other concerns.
Right. And, you know, when we talk about women representation, 15% of the candidates are women. I guess this is progress to some degree, but at the same time, when we look at the population of the country, or even when we look at it state by state, it's almost always even, right? 50-50 when it comes to population of males to females. So how are you feeling about this? How are you feeling about this 15% women representation of candidates? Do you think they are adequately represented?
Well, the answer to that, of course, is no. But I think that what we see is that, you know, in the patterns of representation of women, Malaysia has not made significant gains than that of Indonesia or Timor-Leste or other, or even in some ways, countries like Cambodia, or where you've seen more women involved in politics and more female representatives. It's almost like they've plateaued. And the percentage of women in the state assembly before it was dissolved was only 9%, which is a very small number. So while I think 15% is small in terms of that 37 candidates out of 239, and I think the political parties, in particular, some political parties have not slated enough women and addressed the, really kind of respectfully recognized that Johor is a state where women are very important, and as is the rest of Malaysia for that matter. But what we see is a situation where I think it's a bit promising and there's a silver lining in that many of the female candidates have been placed in more competitive seats, so they have a chance of winning. And so I'm hopeful that there'll be more female representation and it will go break the threshold of 10%. And keep in mind that DUN representatives and state assemblies tend to have less women than we even find at the national stage. And so in order for change to happen, it has to happen from these other bodies in the state assemblies. You know, compared to places like Malacca and Sabah, Johor has more female representation. Right. So it's clearly a situation where the glass is only a quarter full, has a long way to move, or even only 15% full. But the fact of the matter is that it is filling up.
Right. Now, you mentioned in one of your articles that it's a buffet of candidates. I like the term that you use, buffet of candidates. But Bridget, is this a buffet that people actually want to devour? You've been on the ground over the past week or so, and you've written many articles. You've spoken to many people. Do you sense excitement or eagerness from Johorians on the ground?
So first of all, during COVID, people say you shouldn't be eating at buffets. So in this situation, right. I would say that we have a dynamic where people are a little cautious about the buffets on offer. They'd rather go to their favorite restaurant and eat in a smaller place and things that they trust, right?
Right.
So the buffet, and while Johor has terrific food, and I highly recommend coming to visit in places like Moi and Klang and others, right? My sense is that people are more concerned with food on the table than what's being offered in terms of the politicians in this context. So there is a lot of distrust about the promises of political solutions to the everyday conditions of our ordinary people. The economy, COVID, health, education, the issues of border opening, all of these things are very much on the minds of voters. We see a situation where the campaign narratives are about, Najib and 22 months, as opposed to, the real concerns about what sort of policies are going to be put in place, how the economy is going to become better, how are wages going to change, how are young people going to get jobs. These things have not really had meaningful discussion, substantive discussion among the candidates. And things that do get discussed are very tokenish, as about, they said this or that, as opposed to like the Johor Health Guard, for example, and no meaningful discussion about how can there be a transformative health policy for Johorians. All of the manifestos are very weak. Some of them are stronger than others. I would say UMNO's and BBN's is quite strong in some ways. PN is strong. Pejuang has a strong manifesto. Harapan has elements that are strong. But the point is that there's no discussion of this because they don't think that the people are concerned about how they're going to address the problems. And the fact is, the ordinary voters don't trust most of the politicians to keep their promises anyway. So there is this kind of real gaps from the perspective of voters and to describe the mood, I think I described today in my article that it's one person said it's the coldest election they've had in history. Well, I think that for opposition, Harapan is particularly cold because they have a lot of their own supporters that are quite cool towards them. But I would say that that is true of all voters because they're all looking at the political system as saying, hey, there's a big gap between what you're promised and what you're delivering and the experiencing that we're having. And this kind of, it's an anti-elitism, anti-political vibe that I think is very different for the politicians who take their support for granted, which is no longer something that they can do. There has to be won, and they're not doing enough to win them over. So there is very little mood, but it is a little bit warmer than Melaka.
So, I'm very curious as to what voter turnout is going to be like, because like you mentioned, there is, although this is a state election, you would expect more local issues to be highlighted, but that isn't the case. I'm not on the ground. I haven't been to that many charamas, but I've seen some of the charamas on the Facebook Live and I've read the reports. And it is like you said, it feels as if it's like a G14 sort of national level elections type of thing where it's, let's get rid of from the Harapan side, it's let's get rid of the kleptocrats and the cronies and the Barisan Nasional and all of these sorts of things which we've heard before. And like you mentioned, people are more worried about bread and butter issues instead of these sort of big national politics sort of narratives. So with that in mind, what's the voter turnout going to be like? Especially among younger people, I'm also wondering about the impact of Undi 18. Have you gotten a chance to speak to a lot of younger people?
I made a point to do that because this is, I believe, a youthful election in terms of the power of young people to determine the future of the country and not just Johor. And so, it's always fun to speak with young people because they always have different perspectives in that context. I think in looking at voter turnout, I've tried to look at the share of automatic registered voters, and I've also looked at the kind of the patterns that we've seen. So Johor was like Melaka. The voter turnout was on average 80% in the last four elections. So it's been traditionally very high. Yeah. We find among young people that among Chinese and Indian Johorians, that is a little bit more reluctance to vote than there is among young Malays Johorians.
Why
so
is that?
Ethnic
so?
Dimensions. There's a bit more excitement. I think generally across, there's differences. The ethnically Chinese are less enthusiastic about those on offer, so there's more tendency to want to move away. So while I think that this campaign has had a little bit more momentum than the Malacco campaign, and that's still talking operative word little, I would say that the big challenge with Johor is that you have a lot of voters that are outstation, some of which are in Singapore. We only saw around 7,800 postal votes that have come in from overseas. So inevitably, turnout statistically is going to be low because you have a lot of people who've never voted before. I mean, I've met voters that actually don't even know there's an election going on.
Right.
And I've met voters that are actually didn't know that they are now registered on the electoral roll. And I think this is very telling because there hasn't been a voter education program associated with UNDI 18 in order for them to from the part of the government.
Right.
I mean, the NGOs have tried to do their best, but the fact is that there's probably a lot more gaps to fill in this regard. So to answer your question, I look at turnout. Malacca was around 63%, so it was a drop of around 20%, a little bit less than 20. And among some communities, it was higher. So I am looking, the EC's figure was at 70%. So I'm starting at around 63%, given the fact that I think there'll be slightly more participatory elements, but at the same time, a larger share of voters that won't be coming back. And then I go all the way down to 55% to 68% is my range. Some people think I'm even overly optimistic in the voter turnout.
Right.
A lot of young people have told me they're not voting. But I think that is starting to change a little bit. And a lot of people you have to look at the three underlying causes of why people don't vote. One is COVID, all right? And I think COVID has become normal, unfortunately, in Malaysia. Too many people have COVID, too many have experienced it. So, but it's not like an obstacle for voting. People know that they can vote safely in that process. And fortunately, both in Sarawak and in Malacca, there hasn't been as huge spike associated with COVID as a result of elections. We'll see whether or not that happens in Johor, but I think it's hard to tell because the Omicron spike is already high. The second reason people don't come out to vote is that they're not enthusiastic about the campaign. And number third is that they're away logistically from a perspective of presence, which is sometimes kind of tied to two, but often a reality of the fact that they can't afford to come home and other factors in that context. I think BN is bringing in and PN are bringing more voters back than Harapan, which is a much more fragmented coalition. So I think we're going to see a drop in turnout. My own assessment statistically is a drop in turnout particularly hurts Harapan. And I think that if the drop in turnout is as high as it was in Sarawak, and if we see a shift in support along ethnic and age patterns, it's going to have a profound electoral impact.
When it comes to peninsula politics, Bridget, the focus is usually framed in a Malay seats versus Chinese seats angle. But in your article analyzing the Malacca elections, you highlighted something interesting, something that many don't talk about, and that there was a 19% swing among Indian voters from Pakatan Harapan back to Barisan Nasional. How important is the Indian community in shaping the election results of Johor? And have political parties done enough to reach out to this marginalized community?
So my first point is that I think you need to look at voters multidimensionally. You can't just look at ethnicity.
Right.
So if you'll see in my analyses, I look at ethnicity, I look at class, I look at gender, I look at generational factors, because I think that there's still this kind of monodimensional perspective of looking at voters and only seeing their race. And this is something that has to change from a perspective of reality on the ground and also analysis. But statistically, for example, in GE14, Ethnicity explained about 40% of the behavior and the trends. So therefore, it's still quite important. But in that context, you know, the focus is always still on Malays versus Chinese. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of ethnicized narrative. So we see a lot of the groups being left behind. And this is, for example, in Sarawak, we saw the Badayu and the Iban vote. And I think in particular, the Indian vote was the most important in terms of the significant community in Malacca. And it is extremely significant in Johor, 7% of the electorate. And it's not just that, and it's not concentrated, it's across a whole range of seats.
Right.
So we're looking at seats, I'm currently in Kluang, where I have a large Indian community, and outside in seats like Bekok and Kahang, and we can move on in terms of the large numbers in this area. And this is the swing we saw in Johor that was pivotal in GE14. And it's also the swing that was pivotal for PN and BN gains in Malacca.
Right.
And so, you know, I've interviewed quite a few Indian voters to get a sense of what are their concerns on the ground and how they're looking at things. The MIC is still quite strong in Johor. The Barisan National, both in terms of MCA and MIC, would like to try to gain traction. And they're putting a lot of resources and investment in doing so to try to make a comeback or maintain their positions. And Indian voters have been very much in their focus and their lens well before that of Harappan or other part, the parties like PKR and so forth. So what we see is a situation that I think that the Indian community will be pivotal in determining the level of seats that UMNO BN will hold. And I think that, the sad part about it is that there is no real discussion on the ground of the issues that are concern for the Indian community, such as the high levels of murders in prisons and detention centers, or the conditions on the ground in terms of the fact that the Indian community doesn't have the same level of access to social safety programs and social that the issues associated with jobs and the conditions and still some of the estates. And these issues have been around for a long time, but it speaks to the fact that the community's concerns are really now being driven in very much by patronage politics and resources. It's almost as if the Indian community can be bought politically, or at least some of the way the politicians think about that, because there is a sense that there's high levels of vulnerability in some parts of the Indian community in Johor.
On the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welch, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. After the break, I ask her who she thinks will win the upcoming Johor State elections. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welch, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute, and we're discussing the upcoming Johor State elections. So, Bridget, I also want to get your thoughts on former Prime Minister Najib Tun Razak. And we've seen the videos, Bridget, Najib going here and there, and despite his conviction, despite the fact that he's already found guilty in court, there appear to be many who are excited to meet him. They chant Bosku, sing his songs, and etc. And it isn't just the quote-unquote the Malays, as many people seem to assume or blame. We've seen videos of people, even within the Chinese and Indian communities, fully embracing Dato' Sri Najib as well. What have you learned from the ground? Does reality reflect the videos we've seen circulating on social media?
I think that there are supporters of UMNO and BN, and they see Najib as representing a different time. So it's not, they're not concerned with the crimes that he's committed. They're more concerned with the sense of economic security that he is seen to symbolize. And then his campaign itself is quite flush with funds. So, these two elements, psychological and financial, come together. And, for many Johorians, the Harapan government was not necessarily associated with greater economic security. And it's a hard thing for the Harapan government to come to terms with that they had two different ministers, chief ministers during their tenure in Johor, and many of them were seen to be not as competent as the UMNO chief minister is compared to his two predecessors. And it was a difficult economic time that subsequently was hit very hard by COVID, of which that has also compounded the economic conditions. So it's not Najib the person, it's what the symbolism of what he represents that is seen as symbolic. They want that time of economic security, right, and that nostalgia.
And on that note, do you think that there seems to be a lack of understanding on the part of Pakatan Harapan? We touched on this a little bit earlier, but I just want to bring it up again in context of this Najib factor, because you brought up something very interesting, which is the people, many people who do still support UMNO, Barisan Nasional, or even Najib, they're not looking at Najib, the 1MDB person and the, you know, who has already been found guilty in court for various charges and so on and so forth. They're looking at him for what economic stability or whatever it may be during his time as prime minister. And so instead of offering something to counter, something more robust, Pakatan seems to be focusing on the wrong thing, which is it's difficult to say whether it's the wrong thing, but it's something that perhaps isn't strategic, which is just, he's a kleptocrat, versus to, you know, if people were happy with him because of certain policies, here's how we can offer better policies. What do you think of that?
Well, there's no real discussion of policies in any meaningful way. You know, there's the GSD versus non-GSD. I mean, these types of issues that were associated with Najib's campaign, and, you know, it wasn't just Najib the person that contributed to his downfall in 2018. But I think it's important to understand that Najib represents different things to different people. For the people that are around him, it's the patronage system that they are comfortable with, that with the sense of economic security I mentioned earlier. But for a lot of Harapan supporters, what we're seeing in this last few days is the more that Najib gets mentioned, the more they realize they might come out to vote. Well, this is why it could potentially affect turnout. And also for PN, for Muhyiddin in particular, in his campaign, he's focused heavily on Najib, in that with the idea that this is basically saying, I tried to move beyond that. And so this sometimes has appeal with some voters, which are not comfortable with Harapan, but are looking to Pakatan Nasional in a different way. So, you know, yesterday I had a conversation with a single mother, a Malay woman, and she was telling me about, we were discussing her wage, very low wages, and the struggles she was facing. And she said, you know, I'm trying to figure out who I should vote for. And between her, it was between UMNO and Bersatu. And she said to me, she said, you know, look, I want new leaders. I want a different leadership. I don't want the leaders like Najib. And so this is the way she's thinking of which is Pakatan Nasional is using this type of thinking to try to differentiate and position itself.
Right. And speaking of Pakatan Nasional, they did surprisingly well at the Melaka polls. When I say surprisingly well, they only won two seats, but many expected them to be wiped out completely. But they won two seats that, you know, supposedly were, you know, that UMNO was definitely going to win, I mean, according to some predictions and whatnot. Could we see something similar in Johor, where Pakatan Nasional wins a lot of these seats because of their campaign, because, like you said, people may want new leaders, because they have differentiated, Muhyiddin has differentiated himself from Najib in that sense. Do you think that they could end up winning a lot of UMNO seats, or at least a small portion of UMNO seats?
That's when I remember you tweeted once that you didn't think PN was going to win anything in Malacca.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I was like, oh, I don't think so.
I was wrong completely.
The fact is, The fact is the system is such that it's very difficult for a new party to win,
right?
Because you have to win first past the post. Now, multi-corner fights makes it a more interesting contest from this particular way. You don't necessarily need to win over 50% to win. So in some seats, we're seeing them become competitive because of the multi-corner constituency bases that others. And this is where turnout really can influence the very close margins that might emerge in this context. Now, if we look at the states nationally that PN and Bersatu especially are powerful in, there were two. One was in Kedah, which now the elements of that have now joined Pijuang and are trying to contest. And they have varied support, but limited, very small, but limited support in some seats here. But the other is Johor. Mm-hmm. And so this is a survival election for Bersatu. They have invested tremendously. They have very caliber of candidates. Some places they're stronger versus weaker. There are three areas where Bersatu is contesting quite strongly. One is they're pushing the issues in the Felda areas. And I think in fairness to Bersatu, they have a considerable, I think, positive record here in that they have addressed the issues of housing and the debt, and they've restructured the ownership of FGV, all of which happened under Muyiddin's tenure. And these were some of the major concerns, especially of second-generation settlers. And I think that they're pushing these issues quite strongly in the Felda areas. And that's where, you know, looking at seats like Endau, for example, in Mersing, and north of Mersing, but part of Mersing right across the river, it is an interesting type of seat to examine, right? And I felt that when I was in the conversations with people in the Felda areas. I would also say the second kind of lifeblood of Bersatu has been in the northern part of the state, right, around Pago and Moir. And this is a very interesting history in Johor. You know, Johor is such a large state. You talk about different regions. So there's a different political orientation. You know, people in the south, they're just not so concerned about politics. They're just trying to survive and have good food and live with their families. In the north, there's a bit of kind of a rebellion happening, you know, in that context. And I think seats like Bukit Gambir and Gambir are really being, you know, hotly contested because they don't want to lose that foundation and to want to build on that particular area. Here in Klang, the seat of Makota is quite interesting. But I think, we'll see what I think Amnoen probably has an advantage, but we'll see what happens, right? So I'm also looking at Machap. So we have stronger candidates that are actually allowing putting pressure, right? And so we have these particular dynamics of candidate factor. We have the kind of northern rebellion base of Bersatu in the Felda areas. I would say, you know, they're putting on a good fight. I look at the results, you know, they can go, you know, it's interesting to see whether or not we're going to have the PSB phenomenon, Sarawak, which is that we have a new party emerging as the opposition, or at least a kind of sizable alternate opposition to Harapan. I think Bersatu needs to maintain at least 1 to 4 seats to really be on the national stage. It will be interesting to look at the composition of their vote share. I can say that they have put a large number of resources. I think they're spending quite a lot in some places more than Barisan Nasional. And the other thing that's quite interesting is I would say that their campaign is large. I would say out of all of the campaigns is most policy focused.
Right.
You know, they talk about the Felda areas. Their posters, you know, said, we cleaned the judiciary. We did these things for the vaccines. We can. You know, pan or not these particular things of them taking credit for it, but at least they're talking about issues, which is less true of some of the other campaigns. Right. And I think, they know that. They know that this is a survival election for them and that they're working, trying to very hard to stay relevant politically.
You mentioned it's a survival election for Bersatu. What about other small parties? Because this is, you know, this elections has become a wild, wild west sort of situation. There are multiple cornered fights everywhere. And it's not just between the likes of Barisan Nasional, Perikatan Nasional and Pakatan Harapan. You have the Muda element, which has some sizable popularity on social media. But we've also got the likes of Perjuang, a splinter party of a splinter party of a splinter party. And we've got Warisan coming into the fold, and they are contesting in many seats that are held by DAP. And then we've also got, everyone's, the party that everyone can agree is the most principled of them lot, but has never won an election yet, which is PSM. They are contesting in one elections, many independent candidates. Do any of these parties stand a real chance? I'm guessing Muda does stand some chance in winning some. I'd like to get your thoughts on that as well. But more so the other parties like Perjuang, Warisan, PSM, some independent candidates. Do they have a chance?
So I think, first of all, it's important to realize that what these parties mean, okay, about the way that politics of the country are evolving. First of all, it's increasing the competition, which allows more choices for people, which I think is healthy. I think that all of these parties, perhaps to a lesser extent with Perjuang, because it's still very much an old narrative, are bringing different narratives into the political campaign. Muda and Warisan have different conceptualization of the way people deal with issues of race politics, for example, comparatively strikingly versus Harapan. And PSM brings in issues from the left in terms of the concerns about social justice questions. And so it is my view that these parties, no matter how well they perform, will still be politically relevant because their role is not necessarily about winning seats, but also helping to set narratives. I think Warisan has overextended itself, moving into a state that it probably should not have. And I think it's going to be they're going to have a careful recalibration. I think that Perjuang is fighting to be relevant in potential relations that people are setting in place for the national campaign. If they are managed to win a seat, such as Kempas, for example, they will see a situation where they will try to be part of a broader, different type of configuration. I think one of the factors that's going to emerge out of this election, and I think we see the opposition reconfiguring, and the results will help to shape those dynamics within the opposition more broadly and its future reconfiguration. I don't think Warisan, Perjuang, and PSM they're all struggling to win seats. Muda, I think, it's in a maiden election, and it is, in a sense, its first. Perjuang has contested before in Perak.
Right.
All right, so what we see is a situation where Muda is the first off the block. It is, I think, many in the party are learning hard lessons about politics. It's very different it's easy to talk about issues in social media. It's very different to talk to strangers about how to convince them to vote for you when they've never heard of you before.
Right.
And they're not on social media. And keep in mind, it's a large part of Malaysia is on social media. And many of those who are on social media, most of those on social media don't care a hoot about politics. And they're on social media to be with their friends,
right,
not to discuss political life in that context. So I think that Muda has faced the realities of money and machinery and organization in a kind of a hard lessons. I think they still are retaining chances to win some seats, but particularly only one in Pujuwangsa. But there's no guarantees in politics, and we won't see. We'll see the results on Saturday. I think Muda has had challenges of getting across some of its messages into new areas, but they've been perhaps the most dynamic on social media. But again, one thing about social media is that people live in their own echo chambers. They basically hear from their trusted friends. And this is the first time, you have to get out of your comfort zone and talk to people who are in uncomfortable ways and engage them. But it's very hard to do in a campaign that is very much in a COVID context where it's individual between you and your device, your smartphone,
right.
Sometimes not so smartphone. But in that context, we see a situation where I feel that Muda is going to is going to, you know, if it doesn't win a seat, it's the risks of them not winning a seat is less than for the other parties in that context. But there are going to be lessons learned. And I think that all of these things are going to be positioning for the next stage of when you have a national election. And it's in a sense, Johor provides a testing ground of the complicated nature of the political milieu that Malaysian life is now. Political parties just are not trusted the same way that they were before. And the new entrants have a lot more obstacles in the first past the post system to try to win seats.
Speaking of, you know, shaping the outcomes of the, you know, general elections, how important is the Larkin seat where Muda, because Muda has, you know, is friendly with Pakatan Harapan, but then in a way now they have some tensions, have been having some tensions with Parti Keadilan Rakyat, specifically PKR. And you know that hasn't really like completely washed away, right? It may not the tensions between Muda and PKR may not be as high as it was a week ago, but it's still there. You see it on social media and all. How important is the Larkin seat in which both of them are competing? When it comes to shaping the dynamics of the opposition moving forward, is it important at all?
So I think that Larkin, ironically, I think that all the parties, both PKR and Muda, are facing an uphill battle in that seat, in that area. But we'll see how the results are there. I think that they're trying to position itself vis-a-vis each other to see who wins the most vote share. And as I said earlier, is that all these parties are also trying to position for themselves at the negotiating table from the perspective of national seat allocation. And also, they're not necessarily thinking more carefully about their agenda, what they stand for. But I think Larkin has had two very important implications. Number one is that it means on the ground, PKR supporters are not backing and helping the machinery of Muda. So it's exposing how limited machinery Muda has. Some of that is eased a little bit, but there still is a bit of resentment right. about that you've gone after us in this context. And I think that this has had spillover into other seats. The second issue is more is that it's added to the element that the opposition itself is not united. And I think, you know, we've had a whole series of issues that have done that. We just, in our previous program, we talked about that PKR's decision to go it alone in terms of its own logo. Right? You know, every time the Catalan flag is flying, it sends to voters that this is an opposition coalition that's not united. All right. And then you also see a situation where you have the Larkin seat, which shows that they're now going against each other. So it takes on the symbolic effect of basically, you know, of saying, hey, we're competing in seats. And I think compared to the past, where in 2018, it was about the opposition winning government, now it's really about the opposition trying to win seats.
Right.
In a way to survive. And there seemed to be concerned about their respective individual fortunes. The cooperation on the campaign is very limited. We do see some cooperation between DAP, Amana, and Muda, but we see a little bit less vis-a-vis the relationships with PKR. I think this is part of what is a cooling campaign. It doesn't have the same level of cooperation.
Right. Before we wrap this conversation up, we are a few days away from the election. I have to ask you for some predictions. What do you think? You've brought up many important factors for us to really consider, including, Barisan Nasional's, so, you know, that may be a surprise to many, but having the most, perhaps most robust manifesto relatively to the other parties. How do you think all the parties are going to end up doing in the elections? Do you think it's advantage Barisan Nasional?
I think it's definitely advantage Barisan Nasional, but keep in mind, it's always in Barisan Nasional, it really means advantage UMNO. in that context. Mm-hmm. But I think that they've had, they're fighting contests that they didn't think they had to. But I think that, you know, they still have a lot of machinery. There's some infighting inside the party. So I do think that this is still AMLO's election to lose. I felt that from the very beginning. And they're doing, you know, people are challenging it, but I think ultimately they come into this at the advantage. They could even win two-thirds in the like they did in Malacca.
Right.
And I think, you know, if we see significant voter turnout drop and voter switch, we could see potentially a very significant drop in seats for Harappa from the perspective of that. And some of that may move to PN, but I think that ultimately when voters stay home, this advantages UMNO-BN much more so than others. But what's interesting is I see two other things that I think are very important. You know, in the campaign and looking at the elections, I made a point to stop on Malacca on my way down to Johor. Right. And one of the things, and I did have a kind of postmortem of Malacca election. And I asked the question, has the new government made a difference? Mm. And the answer is no. And I think that, you know, for a lot of Johorians, they're asking themselves, why are we holding this election? Mm-hmm. Will it make a difference in our lives? And I think that, you know, a lot of the concern still seems to focus on the well-being and the interest of politicians, not from fundamentally changing the quality of life of ordinary Johorians or ordinary voters. And so my concern is that this will add to the cynicism and not necessarily add to the kind of inspirational sense of wanting to kind of transform the nature of politics. And of course, if there is a big victory for UMNO, which is one of the things that's significantly more on the cards than others, what we're going to see is that we're going to have a push towards a general election, and we're going to have an opposition that will be transforming itself, and it will be a very difficult period for the different opposition in order to get its footing.
So a lot more work for politicians to do, especially politicians on the Pakatan Harapan side. On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Bridget.
Most pleasure.
That was Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, sharing her thoughts ahead of this week's Johor State elections. So if you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.